Well, it's good to be with you again, and look forward to sharing in this time, and look forward to the opportunity to share with you in the Lord's table this morning. And you know, one of the things that I think we neglect at times is what the table says about our relationship to one another. We give a great deal of thought to what the Lord's Supper says to us about our relationship with God, you know, the forgiveness that we have received. But I'm not sure that we always think about what this table says about our relationship with one another, because it does say something. And I want us to think about that a little bit today. You know, I have two boys, and like typical brothers, my two boys have the innate ability to irritate the living snot out of each other. It is their gift. They just know how to do it. Our oldest son is now in college and living in Nashville, and to be honest, that's brought a great deal of peace to our home. But then he comes home. And the funny thing is, when he comes home for holidays or break, the first 24 hours, my two boys can be the best of friends. They will talk and they will laugh and they will play video games, but I guarantee you that's only going to last for about a day. There is a definite shelf life to this peace that they have, okay? Because after about a day, somebody is going to say something, somebody is going to do something, and it starts all over again, and I'm thinking somebody's got to move out, and it might be me, you know? But let's be transparent, that's how it is in families, right? You know, when you live with people long enough, when you just know people long enough, if you work with people long enough, if you go to church with people long enough, sooner or later, something happens. Somebody says something, somebody does something that irritates you or that hurts you. It's just part of life with people. It's a part of relationships. You know, sometimes the irritation is just that, it's an irritation. Sometimes it's a real hurt. And let's be honest, there are times in life when we are hurt and we are betrayed to the point that it is life-changing. And it devastates us. And whether it's an irritation or a life-changing hurt, you always have just two options. Either you carry it to the point that it destroys you, or you find a better way. In the Old Testament, in the book of Genesis, there's a man named Joseph who is an amazing example of someone who found the better way. I would encourage you sometime to go back and read his whole story. It's chapters 37 through 50 in the book of Genesis. And, you know, you talk about brothers who had issues. I mean, my two are nothing compared to these guys, all right? There were 12 brothers, which that in itself is a nightmare, I'm sure, okay? 12 brothers, Joseph was the favored of their father. And the other brothers allowed the jealousy to build to the point that one day they decide that they're going to kill him, but then in a moment of compassion, they decide, well, we won't kill him, we'll just sell him into slavery. You know, wonderful compassion that they had. We'll make some money off of him, we'll sell him into slavery. So Joseph is ripped away from his family, he is ripped away from his land, he is ripped away from everything that he knows, and he is sold into slavery in a foreign land. And to make things worse, while he is there, he is falsely accused of a crime. And even though he did the right thing, the moral thing, the upright thing, Joseph is falsely accused, and he ends up spending years in prison for something that he did not do. But long story short, God was with him. God was with him through all of that. And the wisdom and the help that God gave him brought Joseph to the attention of the Pharaoh. And soon Joseph rises to a position of power. He is the Pharaoh's right-hand man. And the insight and the wisdom that God gave him enabled him to foresee a famine that was coming. It enabled him to help lead that country in preparation and to save that country through a time of famine. And guess what happened during the famine? Joseph's brothers come to Egypt to find food. And there they not only find food, they find themselves face to face with the brother that they had betrayed. And what was the final result of that reunion? I want you to look with me to Genesis chapter 50 and verse 15. Genesis 50 and verse 15. When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, "What if Joseph holds a grudge against us and pays us back for all the wrongs we did to him?" So they sent word to Joseph saying, "Your father left these instructions before he died. This is what you are to say to Joseph. I ask you to forgive your brothers the sins and the wrongs they committed in treating you so badly. Now please forgive the sins of the servants of the God of your father." When their message came to him, Joseph wept. His brothers then came and threw themselves down before him. "We are your slaves," they said. But Joseph said to them, "Don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. So then don't be afraid. I will provide for you and your children." And he reassured them and spoke kindly to them. This dysfunctional family is reunited. And now, the father, Jacob, is dead. And when he has died, and now that dad's protection is gone, the brothers make the assumption that probably all of us would make. Now that dad is gone, Joseph is going to exact his revenge. And so they come to him and they offer themselves as his slaves, and they actually make up this little story. "Oh, by the way, Joseph, before dad died, he told us to tell you, please don't kill us." If we were in Joseph's place, wouldn't the temptation be powerful to exact revenge? I mean, think for a moment about everything that he went through. Torn away from everything that he knew, torn away from his family, from his land, he ends up a slave, he ends up in prison for years, all because of what these guys did to him. And now the tables have turned. Now Joseph is second in command of the whole country. He can literally do anything to these guys that he wants to do. Anything. After all that he had to endure, wouldn't the temptation be great to exact some vengeance? I mean, let's get honest. Wouldn't you at least want to mess with him a little bit before you let him off the hook? But what did Joseph do? When Joseph sees them offer themselves as slaves and make up this story to try and protect themselves, that dad said, please don't kill us, Joseph cries. He is heartbroken that they are afraid of him. He is heartbroken to think that they believe he would exact vengeance. He is heartbroken that they don't see his heart because he has demonstrated anything but a spirit of vengeance. And not only does he not make them pay in some way, but he actually promises to provide for them and for their families. Joseph could have done anything that he wanted to do, But Joseph chose to let it go. Joseph responds in a spirit of forgiveness. And you see, it is forgiveness that opens the door to a new life. It is forgiveness that opens the door to a new start. And it is forgiveness that reflects the heart of God. And I want you to understand something this morning, because I think sometimes we get confused when we start talking about forgiveness. Forgiveness does not mean ignoring or denying or excusing behavior. That's not forgiveness. You'll notice that Joseph didn't just let them off the hook and excuse their behavior. He says, look, what you guys did, you intended to harm me. What you did was wrong. You're responsible for it. You chose to do it, and there's no excusing that. What you did, you intended for harm. Forgiveness should never be equated with a denial of wrongdoing. We're honest about behavior, and people have to be held accountable for their actions. And we realize, too, that when it comes to being reconciled to someone, relationships operate from two sides, and that other person may choose not to be reconciled. There may be times when people continue in unrepentant, destructive behavior, and you have no choice but to set those boundaries. So understand today that when we talk about forgiveness, we're not talking about just ignoring or denying or excusing things away. We're not talking about accepting unrepentant behavior. What I'm talking about is what happens in here. What I'm talking about is our own heart and our own spirit. And the spirit of forgiveness says, I am willing to let this go. And I am not going to hold on to that desire to see you pay. I am not going to continue to hold it over you. I am not going to continue to live in that over and over again. Forgiveness says, I will let that go and restore in my heart a genuine love and concern for you. Again, that doesn't always mean we can be reconciled, because sometimes other people choose not to be reconciled. And I cannot control the behavior or attitudes of other people, but I do have control over what happens in my own heart and my own spirit. And I can say in my own heart and spirit, I let it go and I offer you forgiveness. Just as Joseph did. Despite all that they had done, he lets it go, and he goes that extra step and says, I will provide for you and for your families. See, forgiveness says, I let that go, and I honestly want God's best for your life, and I will do whatever I can to see that happen. Forgiveness. You know, we've all been around long enough, and we've all dealt with people long enough to know that that kind of reaction is pretty rare. It doesn't happen often. And even among the followers of Jesus, you know what? It doesn't always happen the way that it should. And maybe this morning we need to step back and ask what's going on inside. What's happening here at a deeper level, at a heart level, when we refuse to embrace the spirit of forgiveness? See, I think there's something that's powerful that is revealed in what Joseph says. Here's the real issue. When you and I refuse to let it go, when you and I refuse to forgive, here's what we need to understand. This is what's happening in our heart. And if you get nothing else, this is what it all comes down to. Your ability to forgive begins with your willingness to trust God. Your ability to forgive begins with your willingness to trust God. Did you notice what Joseph said? He said, "Am I in the place of God? I'm not God." He is the judge of everyone and all things, and you know what? He's going to sort things out, and I'll trust him to do that. That's his place, and it's not mine. I am not in the place of God, and I am not the judge. That all belongs to him, and I will trust God enough to let him sort it all out. But beyond that, he goes on to say, in spite of what you did to me, in spite of the fact that you intended it for harm, God actually turned it around and used it for a greater purpose. Despite your destructive and hurtful behavior, God took care of me. Despite what you did to me, you know what? God continued to work in my life. And all that stuff that happened, all the stuff that occurred because of what you did, guess what? God redeemed it. God was able to take that mess and he turned it around and he used it to fulfill his purpose in my life. Again, it's not to say that what you did should be excused. What Joseph is saying is God is bigger than your intentions. God is greater than what you can do to me. See, no matter what happens, God is able to redeem it. God is able to care for me. God is able to fulfill his purpose in my life. You see, what the story of Joseph tells us is that nothing that anyone else does to you, nothing that anyone else intends for you, can ever destroy or derail God's purpose in your life, or God's ability to take care of you, or God's ability to redeem everything that happens in your life. No person on this earth has the power to overcome that. God is always bigger than anyone else's intentions for you. God is always bigger than anything else that anyone can do to you. He is always able to take care of you, and he's always able to fulfill his purpose in your life. And he can even take the garbage that is done and turn it around and redeem it and bring good out of it. That's how big God is. And you know, when you truly believe that and when you truly trust in that, you're able to let it go. Because you know God's bigger. When you truly trust in that, you're able to let it go. It's when we lose sight of the bigger picture of who God is and how he continues to work in our lives, that's when we hold on to things. And that's when those hurts and that's when those wrongs become the dominant power in our lives. See, it's kind of like this. I was watching a James Bond movie. And, you know, I'll be honest, there are a couple of things that I love that I will never have. I love really, really nice cars, the kind that I will never, ever own in my life. And it's really hard for me to watch movies like Mission Impossible and James Bond because they have all these nice cars, you know, Aston Martins, BMWs, all that kind of stuff. And what do they do to them? They destroy them. They blow them up. They drive them off bridges. And it breaks my heart. You know, it's just... people die in a movie, who cares? It's just a movie. But you smash a car, that's just wrong. That's just wrong. The other thing that I love is watches. I like really, same thing, the really nice watches that I'll never, ever own in my life. And you know, I was watching this James Bond movie, and you know James Bond wears Omega watches. I know that not because I'm a James Bond fan, but because I'm a watch fan. So I just know that he wears Omega watches. And so I'm watching this movie, and he has his Omega watch, and of course, his watch is also an explosive device, which is, you know, interesting. But there's this moment in the movie where he slides the watch across the floor, and it blows up, and he gets away. And most people think that's, like, really cool. And you know what my first thought is? That was an Omega Seamaster that lists for $7,500 and you just blew it up. What is your problem? You know? Now, never mind the fact that it saved his life. Okay? You see, when you lose sight of the bigger picture, the wreckage and the blowing up of the cars and the watches, that becomes unforgivable. But when you see the big picture, you can let go of the explosions. And the same thing is true in life, in your relationships with others. You know what? There are wrecks that happen. There are explosions that occur, some big, some small. And when you lose sight of the bigger picture, that there is a God who continues to take care of you through all of it, and there is a God who is always able to turn everything toward his good, and there is a God who always fulfills his purpose, when you lose sight of that, all you see is the wreckage and the explosion. And it has power over you. It becomes the dominant power in your life. When we hold on to a spirit of unforgiveness, what we are doing, whether we realize it or not, is we are separating that relationship with that person who hurt us from our relationship with God, and we're pretending that they're not related, that they're not connected. But they are connected. They're connected at the deepest level, because my ability and my willingness to offer you forgiveness is rooted in trusting God with my life. It's about trusting Him and His ability to sort it all out and believing in His power to turn everything around and to bring purpose out of everything for my good and for the good of His kingdom. And when I hold on to the spirit of unforgiveness, what I'm saying is I'm not really trusting God to do that. See, I think Jesus made the same connection. This is what he said in Matthew chapter 6 in verse 14. For if you forgive other people when they sin against you, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you do not forgive others their sins, your Father will not forgive your sins. Hard words. But we have to deal with them because they're there. That's what Jesus said. If you forgive, then you're forgiven. But if you refuse to forgive others, then God will not forgive you. And I think what Jesus is saying here is the very thing that we've been talking about. When I trust God with my life, absolutely, and I trust Him completely for the forgiveness of my sins, and I put my life in His hands, then I am able to let the other stuff go. But when I am unwilling to offer forgiveness and grace to other people, what I'm really saying is that in my own heart, I'm not really trusting God with my life. I'm not really trusting God with my life or even for the forgiveness of my own sins. Because if I really had that kind of trust in God, I'd be able to let this go. You see, the two are deeply connected. My inability to forgive is an expression of my unwillingness to truly trust God. Rather than believing and trusting that God is able to care for me, rather than trusting that God is big enough to turn around anything that is done to me, rather than believing that my God is big enough and great enough and grace-filled enough that no one else can do anything to me that will ever derail or destroy His purpose in my life, instead of trusting in that, I hold on to that hurt or to that wrong as if it has the greatest power over me, and it has the last word over my life, rather than God. And when you look at it that way, unforgiveness ends up being a form of idolatry. Unforgiveness is an expression of idolatry. If something keeps me from trusting in God, then I have given that thing more power over me than I am giving God. It's idolatry. You know, the hurt, betrayal, failure, disappointment, it's part of the human landscape, okay? We're always going to deal with it. But as the followers of Jesus, we are called to follow a better path, the one of forgiveness. And Joseph reminds us that forgiveness flows from the trust that we have in our God, this God that we claim to believe in. It is that testimony that says, I will give nothing greater power over my life than I give to God. I refuse to let anything, even the biggest hurts and disappointments in my life, I will not give those the final word over my life. I will always trust my God. And I believe that He will always take care of me, and He will always be able to fulfill His purpose in my life. And no matter what anyone else intends for me, my God will always work for my good. And so I let it go. Maybe this morning there's some hurt, there's some wrong that still has power over your life. Will you trust God enough today to let it go? It doesn't mean that you excuse what happened. It doesn't mean that that other person will choose to be reconciled or that they'll be repentant. But it's about what happens here. You can live with that and relive it to the point that it destroys you. Or you can find a better way. You can trust God enough to let it go. Would you bow your heads with me for a moment? Forgiveness begins when we renew our trust in God. So right now, would you just quiet your heart and would you listen to what the Father says to you? I think He's saying to you this morning, just like Joseph, I've taken care of you. I'm big enough to take anything that happens and turn it around. I can redeem it. I can use it for your good and the good of my kingdom. Nothing that anyone does can defeat my purpose for your life. So don't give it that power. I am your God. So trust me and let it go. We're going to share in the Lord's table now. And I'm going to ask those who are helping to serve, if you would come at this time. This is the Lord's table. And we come today celebrating the forgiveness that we have received. But we also remember that as we have been forgiven, we also forgive others. Here at the table, we remember what Christ has done. We give thanks. Here at the table, we confess our faith and our trust in Him and His work in our lives, and we testify that through the body and the blood, we have become the body of Christ. This is the place that by faith or grace, we encounter the real presence of Jesus and his grace. So I invite you today to respond in faith, to receive his forgiveness, and to reflect his forgiveness to others, that we might be his body in our world.